This is the Personal Finance Show.
Hello, I'm Bo Humphreys, and welcome to a special holiday giving episode of the Personal Finance Show. 2 weeks ago, I got an email from J Money and the team from Rockstar Finance. They had $100 to give to the first 20 personal finance bloggers to respond to the email, with the condition that the $100 would be used to give back locally and do some good. The Rockstar Finance Community Fund is an amazing initiative that helps people do good in their community. Rockstar Finance has many personal finance bloggers on their list, so even though I thought I responded quickly, more than 100 people responded before me. I didn't get the $100. But then I thought, I like this idea, and I have $100 of my own. So I started looking for a local charity, as I am a new Hamiltonian and didn't already have one in mind. Google led me to City Kids. City Kids is a gift of Christmas campaign where you can buy toys and drop them off at a Canadian Tire or local police station. Then I started reading more about City Kids and realized that there was much more to them than I thought. Todd Bender founded City Kids over 20 years ago and has become a huge organization in Hamilton, with branches in Ottawa and Regina, Saskatchewan. I decided I would visit the City Kids headquarters, bring the toys I bought, get a tax receipt, always get a tax receipt, and see if Todd wouldn't sit down with me to tell his story. I talk about saving and investing and even spending your money, but I don't talk as much as I should about giving away some of that money to those who might need it a bit more than you. The holidays are when we can all take a break from our daily lives, spend time with family and friends, and reflect on what's important to us. It's important to me that there is more giving in my life. Maybe not always money or things, but time as well. We all have skills and talents, and we use them to make money, but they can also be given. I'd like to thank J Money and Rockstar Finance for inspiring me to put together this holiday giving episode and the last episode of 2017, where you will learn about Todd Bender and his amazing charity, City Kids.
Right, about the work that we do. Boy, has it evolved over the years. The short piece is that when I was 20, 21, I was in seminary and trying to figure out a path for my life. And, you know, as a kid growing up who was told I'd never amount to anything, figuring out later having ADHD and things like that, it was a real struggle. I wanted purpose. I wanted to know my life was going to count for something.
And is that what drew you to seminary?
Well, yeah. And the fact that I even got in hindsight now, I realize they're probably desperate for enrollment. But, academics was never my strong point, but changing the world was something I just wanted to do something that mattered. And I think, you know, I didn't have a terrible upbringing. My parents were great, but I was just misunderstood as a kid. And so when you grow up with this low self-esteem and you just get sick and tired of feeling sorry for yourself, I wanted to do something to know that my life counted. So when I got to seminary, I met a little boy. I ended up spending more time working in a drop-in center with all these kids. And one night, I was kind of a big brother to a few of them. One night I was walking with the kids home, And I was, quite frankly, feeling sorry for myself. And this little boy, Sean, was walking up on the railroad tracks that led to his house. And I'm looking up at the stars. It was getting dark out. And I'm lost in my thought, totally ignoring this little boy because I'm feeling sorry about what is my life about? Why am I here? I'm probably flunking out. And somewhere along that line, Sean came back. He was this tough little boy, too, 7-year-old boy, came from a rough home. And it was one of those epiphany moments where the light bulb goes off. I was feeling sorry for myself in the pit of despair as I was just somber, walking slowly along. Sean came back and reached up and grabbed my hand. And it was a absolute immediate epiphany that I knew what my life was going to be about. And I knew in that moment that I was going to spend my life loving kids like Sean. And that the very thing that I was looking for was right in front of me all along. And I've been known to make fairly quick decisions in my life is what freaked my parents out mostly. So I knew that that my life was going to be about loving kids just like this little boy. And so then I began to look, trying to figure it out. Where could I go? Could I go to Toronto? Could I stay in this community? Could I go? And anyhow, I ended up coming to Hamilton. And I would say over 25 years later, I've never looked back. And that story, that moment is as real to me today as it was back then. Now, City Kids has evolved tremendously. So, since then, but that was the catalyst to start.
So this is your catalyst. And then what was the first sort of thing that you did? Did you did you create an organization, or did you just start helping kids in a way?
You know, one of the things you learn really quickly is that when you want to do something bad enough, you'll figure it out somewhere or another,
that's
right?
True,
and people who are determined will figure a pathway out. And so I looked around a lot of different places to try to figure out a concept. I think the thing that drove me most is that, and still the DNA of City Kids today is it's all about the one. It's all for one, right? So I knew that every child mattered, and so I wanted to do something that kept that front and center. But I'm also a big Disney fan, and so you put me in a room of kids, and we're going to have fun. I just love in fact, there's no other audience I'm more comfortable with than kids. So I guess to really wrap it all up, what City Kids is, City Kids is Walt Disney meeting Mother Teresa and starting a kids program, and that's really the DNA. The Walt Disney side is about creating, so we have productions that we do, Saturday programs where we have thousands of kids that attend, and it is a production.
I think that's what surprised me most was, well, first of all, that 2,000 kids, like every week, like for, I guess, certain seasons, or?
Yeah, we run just like a production cycle would be, to be honest, like a television series. So, you know, it's almost two sides of the same coin. The one side is the Walt Disney side, which is we wanted to create inspirational experiences for our kids. The core essence of what we do is we want to take kids from vulnerable communities, kids who don't get a fair shot at life, right, who don't have a lot of support systems, who just need, they don't need us to have all the answers. They don't need us to fix their problems. They just need to know that somebody's in their corner. And so what we did is figure out where those communities are, and then we wanted to create inspirational experiences where kids could be inspired to dream big. So they would know that they're not defined by their circumstances. In fact, because of their circumstances, they're going to have what it takes to achieve greatness. And so at the core of everything we do in our productions, it's all about this message. That's why I love going to Disney. When I go to Disney, I'm like, this is the way the world needs to be.
How many times have you been to Disney?
Well, I'm celebrating my 25th wedding anniversary, and my wife and I are going to Disney.
Awesome.
With no kids. We have children, and we're not taking our kids. So, because it's that inspiration of just what the world should be like, fun and happy and full of joy. So we bring kids into these experiences, and then we inspire them to dream big. But we also help build a foundation of values. Very, very simple, basic values that parents should be teaching to their kids, right? And so we don't try to replace parents. We come alongside our families and support them. So Mother Teresa's side is that we visit every child in their home. And so every child has a relationship. Those 2,000 kids, somebody knows them by name.
So
every child is known by name.
Every week, before you go pick them up on the Saturday, some volunteers go, and they actually go and just chat with people for a little bit. Chat with the parents, chat with the kids.
It's an interesting thing, right? I've been doing it too. I have my own route. I still visit in the same neighborhood I always have. And it's basically always two people go. We have a team that trades off, but we go, we knock on doors. We're handing out flyers of what's happening at the production or at the program that week. But really, it's just a small exchange at the door where kids are to the door, moms to the door. But it's amazing. Well, it's kind of like compound interest. It's the same way. It's, even though it's a small amount each time, it compounds. So when you go and knock on 60 doors every week, times between 48 to 52 weeks a year, sometimes we break for Christmas, and you do that over a period of 5 to 10 years, what compounds in relationship? Here's our equation. If you want to influence a generation, if you want to be able to help change and transform and see kids' lives transformed, you have to build trust. In order to have trust, you have to have relationship. Relationship builds trust. Trust builds credibility, and credibility builds influence. There's no shortcuts to that. There's no app for that. You have to do the time and truly be authentic and care. And it's not an us and them. It's not about us saying we've got all the answers. It's us coming down and saying, yeah, life is tough. But you know, we're here for you. What can we do to help? It's not about judging. It's not about, and you learn that really quickly, that this just some of these circumstances, they're not the stereotypical thing that you read in the paper. There are moms and dads who have made poor decisions, and they still deserve grace, and they still deserve love and help.
How do the parents respond typically? Are they apprehensive at first?
Well, when we first started, and we've been doing this for a long time now, so our reputation precedes us. We haven't advertised for our program for 15 years because word of mouth, neighbor tells, and that's why I believe what happens when you do something right and good.
Sure. But what about at the beginning then?
At the beginning, we worked through the school system, and there was suspicion. And why wouldn't there be? What's in it for you is the thing. And because
why are you putting this on for my kids? Why are you giving them things?
Well, quite frankly, every other religion is knocking on their doors trying to sell them religion, right? And they've heard it all, and talk is cheap. And so when we would first go and say, hey, we've got this program, it's free, We just care about your kids. It's, you know, look at the police department is endorsing it, so it's all safe. We'll care for your kids. Why? I would be suspicious. And
sure.
But when you go back the next week and then their kids come, and then over time, they're like, these folks are the real deal. They truly care about my kids.
So
and
you
then,
had to build your reputation a little bit for that. And just with kids, it's important to have everything right, I guess, right? I guess one mistake and everything goes.
Yeah, and you know, well, it's interesting. I have found so much grace with our families. In fact, you know, it's interesting. People get involved with the work we do because we think we're going to change lives and change the world. But you know what ends up happening? They change our lives.
Hmm.
We go down and we enter into these beautiful worlds of suffering and challenge. And we come away and we say, I don't know what I have to offer these people except for my love and hope. And then you come away being made better because of who they are. So it is not an us and them. It is a we've come down and we're part of their, you know, it's just part of this relationship. So, but yeah, our kids and families are disappointed all the time. They're made promises by people and then those people don't show up. I had a boy when I first started City Kids that was sitting on the sidewalk when we pulled up the City Kids bus. I invited him out. His parents, he says, no, I'm waiting for my dad. My dad's coming to pick me up because it was his dad's week to come pick him up.
Mm.
He was still sitting on the sidewalk when I got back after dropping the kids off after the program. And he went to his house. He was upset. That happened for 2 weeks in a row. The third week, I knocked on the door and said, you know, if he wants to come to City Kids. And he came, he says, no, my dad's coming to pick me up this week. Finally, the fourth week, I went and knocked on the door again. And his dad hadn't picked him up at all. And that week he was ready and so excited to come to City Kids. And, you know, I thought to myself, I don't know those circumstances. It's not about me judging what happened there. But sometimes the most important thing that we do, Bo, is just show up. And that's what we do. And we've been doing it for 25 years. We just keep showing up.
So playing devil's advocate, I guess it's a little ironic. But most people might say, this sounds like a lot of work. And when you started out, how were you expecting to make money? Because most people will want to at least make themselves a living. And even if they have altruistic desires, they have to pay the bills first. So how did that work for you at the beginning?
Yeah, I didn't think about... Well, you know, at the very beginning, it was me living in poverty, right?
Okay.
I didn't have many needs. I didn't care. So I actually lived on nothing. And it was tough. We didn't have a business model. We didn't have the model of how to pay for all of this. And when I first started, I was part of a local congregation as well too. And even though I was volunteering at the time, I worked in a factory in the kitchen. I would scrub.
Really?
I would go in for 5 a.m., 4 or 5 a.m. I would get out in enough time to go to the local school so I could be at recess. Principal gave me authorization to organize soccer at recess, and that was the beginning how City Kids started. And then on the weekends, the church would sponsor. We'd rent a gymnasium, and it didn't cost us. It's unbelievable when you want to do something how resourceful you can be to figure it out, right? We had enough money to feed all the kids pizza, and eventually a church lent us their bus and supported us that way. And then over time, so here's what happens, was we didn't wait to figure out that. We just started doing it. And bit by bit, the money began to fall. People saw what we were doing and began to come alongside volunteers at first. And then the church that was sponsoring us, that I was part of, became part of it. But the journey in the first 10 years was, I mean, when I met my wife and we got married, we lived in poverty. We lived in taverns. One of the houses we were renting for 3 years burned down. We lost everything. Shortly before that, we were just in a bad car accident. It's an interesting story, which I won't go into detail, but I can tell you this. There was another epiphany, but after we lost our car in a car accident, and then we lost our house, and all we had left was two cats and a photo album, and I'm standing in the middle of the street looking at all the fire, looking at my wife in the back of the police cruiser. We were nearly bankrupt because we were financing as much as we could the work. I had nothing left, and I'm sitting there holding two cats. Sorry, no, one cat and a photo album because we couldn't find the other cat. And I was so angry. I was angry at God. I'm like, really? Really, God? I've given up everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, right at that moment, the cat pooped on me.
Oh,
and I realized this is a true story. I realized it was it's the only clothes I had. I didn't even know where I was going to sleep that night.
Oh, man.
But you know what happened next? The most freeing thing ever. I had nothing left to lose.
That's true.
And the next step I took was so empowering. And it wasn't easy after that. But there was no quick fixes. And this is hard work. And it does take time. And over the last 25 years, I've never had an easy year. But I think if you stick with something long enough and it has value, people will see that. And we've got great supporters, loyal supporters. The community of Hamilton has been phenomenally supportive. And we keep expanding and growing.
I think one of the reasons I wanted to come here today is because I don't talk about giving as much. And I feel like in the community of personal finance and bloggers and podcasters, we don't talk about giving. And there will be people around this time of year, around Christmas time, around the holidays, talk about this is the time when you should think about tithing or give away 10% of your income. And I just wanted to hear from you, what should people think of as the benefits of giving, and what are we missing that's not making us have giving as a part of our plan from the get-go and to continue? Maybe we just don't see the value.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the hardest things when I started in this work as a nonprofit charity, right? The mm-hmm. idea of somebody freely giving their money to be able to do the work that we do. And then I didn't take a paycheck in the first 5 years at all.
Working in the factory.
I was
still?
working, and I went back. I grew up in a construction family, so I would drive back 2 hours during the week, and then I would drive back down for weekends for the programming and things. And that's how I earned a living. But when it started, as we formed an organization and a board of directors, and we started talking about this, I remember the first paycheck I got. How guilty I felt. It's like people are freely giving their money, and they're paying me to do. It felt so wrong, and I struggled with it. Even asking for money, I struggled with that for a while. But then I had this experience. Actually, it was with a sales guy who also raised a lot of money for charity. And he sat down with me once and he says, Todd, you got to kind of do a judo flip on this. You're thinking about it all wrong. He says, you are giving people the opportunity, and this is this altruism, right? The opportunity to enter into a beautiful story. He says, you know, say what you want about capitalism, say what you want about all that, you know, and how the market works, and how, he says, one of the things that helps us in our marketplace is that when we're able to give back, when we have been successful, when we have made money in our business, when we're able to give back, it makes us feel good, whether it's a justification or whether there's an altruism that happens to that. And better yet, that when we are invited to be part of the story, and this is one of our philosophies at City Kids, we don't look at our supporters as ATM machines. In fact, what we say is probably the same thing that you would share with investing. Invest wisely. Give wisely. We actually, I've had situations where somebody was ready to give us money and a lot of money. I said, I don't want your money yet because you haven't even seen what we do. Mm-hmm. I want you to know what you're investing in because they are part of the story. It's not just us, the people, the kids that we work with and reach, and our donors. We are all one community. And so it's important for me to say, I believe that if you know what you're investing in, we actually use that language, that you're not just giving, you're investing in the transformational change of our children. And I want you to see it because I know if you'll see it and you walk with me to the door, if you come on a Saturday, if you see it then, and you don't want to invest, then at least you've seen what it is. But I truly believe that you'll know what you're investing in, and it won't be the $50,000 you want to give me right now. You're going to want to give a lot more.
And the thing about City Kids is that you can, I mean, I'm here. I'm here at City Kids. You can see it. How many staff do you have here?
Yeah, so we work heavily with volunteers. That's one of the ways we're able to keep our administrative costs so low. So we have 26 to 27 full-time equivalent staff. Mm-hmm. We hire former participants as well, too. So kids after 25 years, kids who've come up through the programs.
Of course.
They're on. Some of them are on contract staff with us. They lead some of our programs, actually, as well, too. And then we have about between 350 and 400 volunteers that help make all the systems run and all that.
How many buses are out in the yard right now?
Yeah, we have 17 full-sized used buses. We get them when they're about 15 years old, and we keep them running for another 5 years. And we have actually we have 26 bus routes, so we use them more than once. And Wednesday nights, they also go out for our youth program.
So I don't know if everyone's aware, but if you're a registered charity, your financials are public.
Yes.
Right? You have you don't have to publish all the little details, right? Like,
but we do. Yes.
I can take a pretty good guess at your salary range because it's published in the CRA document, and there's one person in the category.
Yeah, that's right.
And I can only guess that it's you, but it took you 25 years to get there, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about running an organization like this is salaries are a big part of it because it's the people.
Yeah.
That are running you.
Yeah.
This organization is run very well. I mean, just even looking at the statements that I saw in the annual report that you sent out, I mean, this is run like a pretty big corporation.
Yeah, and we work really, transparency and accountability is all really important.
It's so, all there.
I mean, our audit, and I think our whole industry, if you will, is really going that direction. Funders and donors and supporters, they're smart folks, right? And now with the access to information, And I think they've just been driven to, because there's so many organizations, so much need, they've been driven to do more research and understand more so they can give wisely. And so we really try to practice transparency and accountability. So we post not just our audited statements, and they're online as well, too, with CRA. We've actually invited the charity watchdogs in, like charity intelligence. And so you can go on, they can give us a report card on things. And when it comes to, the compensation piece, this is a hard piece because it's...
guilt that you felt at the
beginning. Well, yeah, and the people that enter into this work typically do with an altruistic attitude,
true,
right? And we have very real needs that, and people, you know, it costs the same amount of milk and bread in the store it does for everybody else, right, for folks. And so when we look at our compensation model, what we try to do is say, look, we're never going to pay the highest. We're not going to pay the lowest. We're going to try to hit right in the middle. No one's ever going to get rich here.
But this is your job, though.
But this is the job. And quite frankly, we want great people. We want to attract great people, because the better the people are, the more impact we're going to have for our kids. And the longer we can keep them as well.
Exactly.
The more sustainability that
we
have.
Well, the longer someone's in an organization, the more ideas and more creativity comes out as well, because they have experience
so
that
true,
they can
yeah.
use. And all the things that were difficult for them at the beginning become easy, and now they can focus on yeah. actually helping the company grow.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I think people forget that for an organization as large as this, this is your job. It wasn't always. I mean, you would have made it your job, except early on, you didn't have any money. You had to have other jobs. But for you to actually do all the things you do now, you opened up locations in Ottawa and in Saskatchewan?
Yeah, yeah. So my dream all along after leaving seminary was I'm going to reach all the kids. I'm going to help all the kids in Canada.
Sure.
And that's what 20-year-olds think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have, and I still, you know, I
Why
would
not?
Say I'm an idealist still. I'm probably leaning more towards a realist, but I'm still an idealist. So my heart was always for kids across the country. And I have a real soft spot for First Nations and Aboriginal folks, because I think there's just such tremendous need and struggles there that...
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, but I got to Hamilton, and it was like, after the first year, if I can just help one kid, I'm doing well, because realizing the overwhelming, what it takes to run an organization, if I would have known what I know now, back as a 20-year-old, I may not have even started on the journey because of the work that it takes to even show up on a Saturday.
Well, the logistics of running 17
yeah.
buses full of kids every Saturday is, I mean, high school principals right now are just like,
yes.
you know, crying and hiding in
yes.
the corner.
There's
listening
never.
To this.
And, you know, I was saying to my staff the other day, this work that we do is hard, and it should be hard.
Sure.
It should be hard, because the work that it's complex problems need complex solutions. But sometimes it could be a little easier. There could be some days where it's a little easier.
Well, it seems like you've done a lot of work to make it efficient, which to me, efficiency makes things a lot easier, and just having everything organized.
Well, we have good, you know, and I would say, you know, one of the things I learned early on, and I'm an avid reader, so why the formal traditional, you know, I ended up going back to try and working towards my MBA still, but the dawn of the internet in the 90s, when now you can access any information you want, so I am an organic learner continually.
Mm.
And one of the biggest things I've learned is find people who've been there that are smarter than you, and then listen to them. So I'm sure as you walk through here, you're going to see baby boomers, you see my assistant who's been with me for 15, 16 years. He's in his 70s. He's a retired school teacher. He's got his master's degree. He volunteers from the very day he started. He gives about 40 hours a week minimum.
Wow.
Minimum. He's here. He's here before I am.
It's
in
amazing.
The morning. He keeps me organized. And people like that, and putting people around you on our board, all those types of people who are smart, who've been there, who can take from their own industry and apply it, that's how we've been able to do what we do. People call me the visionary. They call me, I don't even know what half the stuff means half the time. And I often say I get way too much credit. I also get way too much blame for a lot of things.
Sure.
But the truth of the matter is, Bill, the work that we do here is because there's a lot of amazing people who all bring their pieces to this great story we're trying to tell. And, you know, my whole philosophy is this. I truly believe, and this is my faith philosophy, God is telling a great love story. It's not a tragedy. And for the time I have here on earth, I can either be part of this great love story where I can bring faith, hope, and love to the people around me, and in this case, beautiful kids who just need to know someone cares and loves them. And while I'm here, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to move that forward in my generation. As long as I have breath in my lungs to do, that's what I'm working at. And I think that is refreshing for people, and the people that are here have entered into that story, and they're bringing their own gifts and talents to do that.
And I like that everybody's welcome. You know, you don't have to be religious. You don't have to be part of a church or anything. Parents can come and they can go to the website, citykids.ca, right? And
yes.
They
absolutely.
How do they, is that how they call you or whatever?
Believe it or not, the way they access mostly now is Facebook. That's how we
Facebook,
have.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
CityKids with a Z.
CityKids with a Z. Yes.
Z. I'm Canadian. Yeah. So I say Z, right?
Yeah. Well, I say Z or Z, but okay. Yes. CityKids with a ZZ, however you say it. Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, our parents and our kids inform everything because it's, I keep saying this, it's not an us and them. It's not us trying to come down and say, here's all the solutions. We're just loving our kids. And parents give us feedback. We open, you know, we have two-way communication, and everything we do is based on trust. And what we've learned a lot along the way is the families that that we have the privilege to be part of, if they just have a helping hand, if they just know someone's rooting in their corner, these are resilient people. And when people say, how do you transform? How do you change a child's life? We say, we don't. They do it. We just stick with them. And when a child knows that as they go through their childhood, that there's somebody there that's a constant. We all need a constant. When there's somebody there that's a constant, that can be the catalyst for them to say, you know what? I just had a bad. Here's what we say to our kids. Guess what? It's going to be rough. Mm. You're growing up in the North End. My kids in the North End, they have seen people get shot and die in front of them. They have
really?
Seen horrendous stuff.
Wow.
And so the thing I say to the kids is like, I wish I could rescue from that, but I can't. You're going to see some bad stuff. You're going to have some hard times. But guess what? I'm going to be here.
We're going to be here.
I'm going to be here with you. Yep. And that big red bus is going to show up, and we're going to be able to come, and we're going to have a good time. And for that Saturday, you're not going to have to worry about somebody hurting you. You're not going to have to worry about where you're going to eat. And then I'm going to come back home, and we're not going anywhere. And that alone has been the thing that I think has been the most consistent to see transformational change generationally in the lives of our kids we work with.
You know what I like? That so you did an impact study to see
yes.
the impact. The people can go online and read about it, but I like the three results. 95% believe our program is helping children do the right thing. 87% believe our program helps children to be honest. And 94% believe our program helps children to be more respectful. Those three things, do the right thing, be honest, and be more respectful. I mean, you can apply that to anybody in the world.
Yeah.
And those are good
yeah.
things. It yeah. doesn't matter what your beliefs are. I challenge anyone to say that any of those things are counter to what you believe in. Do
yeah,
the right thing,
yeah, yeah.
be respectful, be yeah. honest. You know, I recommend anybody, if you're going to give money to a charity or to any nonprofit or any, just give money at all, go visit them.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what they do. Like you said,
I agree.
You don't expect your donors to be ATMs. Be part of it in some way. And then it'll feel better. And,
yes.
and when it comes
yeah.
around next year and you're like, oh, what am I giving my money for? Well, you probably know. Because you've been there.
Yeah, and that is the best advice that we can give. Be part of the story. And if it's through giving of time or resources or talents, that's what we desire. We want people to be part of the story.
So what were some of these kids? I mean, I know the one kid was sitting on the waiting for his dad on mm-hmm. Saturday, but what was a typical kid doing on a Saturday? Just sitting at home or just have nothing to do? The parents are working? Is that usually what is happening?
I mean, and times have changed a lot, and we, you know, even our programming is beginning to change with the dawn of the internet changed everything, right? But yeah, I think in the neighborhoods that we focus on where the highest needs are, so some of the social housing pieces like that. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of challenges. One of the problems with social housing is that there's a lot of systemic things that are just because it's all grouped together that can become problematic, right? So, you know, in a lot of those areas, there's a lot of times there's a lot of drug issues that come in. And unfortunately, it's not everyone. It's usually just a pocket that impacts the whole neighborhood. But yeah, we have, you know, when we think about, and I would say there's no typical family, so it's hard to
sure.
be typical and say, what is it? There really is that there's so many. I've got a single dad that I visit that he worked all his life and then he fell off a ladder, hurt his back, could never work again, fell into depression, got drinking, his marriage broke up, and he has his kids, and every day is just a struggle. And he fell into poverty because he has, and that's his story. And he's doing the best that he can,
yeah.
and that's his story, right? I have another parent who's she fell into hard times, made some, you know, decisions as a teenager like we always do, right? And didn't have a great support system, and so she has several kids and is trying to go at herself, trying to put herself back through school, trying to navigate the system, and it is tough, tough life, but she's working at it. And we have other families who are caught in addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are caught in a terrible social net that we've created. Now, you know, look at the social system in in Canada and in Ontario definitely needs to be reformed. It was meant, you know, for a good thing when it was developed years and years ago, but it tends to keep people in the system and it doesn't help promote them to get out of the system. So we've got folks that are caught in that cycle too.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because there are some people that say, why do I have to help people? Why can't the government, or why can't they just, to be the negative Nelly right now,
sure, yeah.
Why can't they just get jobs? You know, why can't they just help themselves? And you're talking about the specific cases where they've tried to get jobs. They're disabled. They have mental health issues. They have addiction. They have, there's certain things that are beyond control.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the people that suffer the most are the kids, because they never even had a choice within this matter.
Yes, well said. And I think it's unfortunate, because if you haven't been exposed to and had an opportunity to be part and see these families, the idea of that individual who's just the deadbeat dad or the deadbeat mom, who, you know, that image in our mind of just like this, these parents who do nothing, who are just
taking advantage of the system,
that,
like you said, yeah.
That is so far and few between of the parents and families that we see. Does it exist? Yeah, but it's not the norm.
It's always a small percentage, right? The people that take advantage are the ones that we hear about, but they're usually just making it worse for the people who actually need help.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. That's typically how laws are created and things like that happen. But by and far, these are good people who fell into hard times. And by the grace of God, it could have been me or you or anybody else through different circumstances. And you're right, kids don't have a choice where they're born into. I think that the thing is, too, that the social safety net that we have, I mean, you think about an average family on social assistance, they have to get by, but, you know, on under $20,000 a year. If we take a look at food, we take a look at rent, we take a look, it's, I don't know anybody who can actually survive on that, let alone thrive on those things. So, you know, and then if they try to get a job and start working, they actually get more money taken away from them. And so the motivation to actually go in and work, when you're actually going to not just lose your social, suddenly you don't have a dental plan now, suddenly you don't have, so it's not, it's complex. And this whole poverty issue is not a simple fix. The homelessness issue, the housing issue, and there's a lot of smart people academically that are working on it and some change is happening. But in the meantime, guess who's growing up? In the meantime, while our policymakers are figuring out, which they need to, all those things need to be solved and we need to do better, there are kids that are going to grow up and a whole generation could be lost if somebody doesn't stand in the gap and say, yeah, it's going to be hard. But you don't have to be like, you can make a difference. You can go to college. You can chase your dreams. And I think that's where we come in.
So speaking of college, you have a scholarship program.
Yes.
When did that start?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A few years back, probably 3 years ago now, we got to the point where we felt, and by the way, this came from when we invited the social research agency to come in and say, look, we've been doing this for a long time. It felt vulnerable because we said, can you validate, can you tell us if we're doing the right thing or not?
It's hard
to know,
right?
They were going to do, because it was an 18-month research assessment.
Okay.
That what if they came out and said, you're not,
they're coming out worse.
But we said, we need to know, because we want to know that what we're doing is actually transforming.
Sure.
And thankfully, they came out and not only did they say what you're doing is working and transforming, and you shared some of the few things from a 130-page
report.
Yeah,
those are just the quick summaries, yeah.
What they also said is that we've taken such a unique approach. They actually published their assessment in a social science research journal.
Nice.
Because of the uniqueness of how we're able to bring both social science and faith together and how we go ahead and assess. So they validated what we were doing, that it was working, and they also gave us some recommendations. And so we've been applying those recommendations. And so we journey with kids from 3 all the way up to 16, turning 17. And what we realized is all this time we've been building a foundation to launch their dreams. We've been inspiring them to dream big. And then they get to the point where they're like, okay, I want to do it now. We're like, how can we, in a practical way, saying, okay, you want to do, you applied for college. We're now going to have a bursary program that we can help in a very practical way. But rather than just paying for tuition, we know there's needs that tuition and OSAP doesn't pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we said is, what are those other needs that are those barriers that prevent you from being successful?
Great.
So the Weston Foundation, group of folks came alongside and we said, we want to pilot something and we want to take a unique approach. We're not just going to give them a bursary like a lot of the other. So we did our research. We said, there's lots of this stuff out there. But we just don't want to give them a bursary and say, have fun with college, hope it goes well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stay part of their lives.
Okay.
So we're going to keep accountability there, because we know for a kid who is maybe the first in 3 generations, not only to complete high school, but to go to college, that first semester, when you're overwhelmed by all of the, how important it is for us to stay there and say, don't give up. You can do it. You can do it. And so financial support, but also the mentoring and relational support continues.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's exciting. And we've had good success so far. We're excited with what the Ontario government is doing in terms of putting more money into students in low-income communities. So we're going to be adjusting how we can even leverage that to a greater extent in the future.
So how many kids?
Yeah, right now I think we have, so we started 3 years ago, and we give up to 4 years of support. So it's not just a one-time.
Wow.
We'll journey with them every year. They have to get their own reports back to us. And it's not about grades.
Okay.
We don't penalize, because I knew what that was like.
Sure,
being penalized for grades. It's about effort. It's about are they doing the hard work, not about intellect. And so they give reports on their experience, and then we continue to fund over 4 years. So I think we have 12 now that we've been journeying with, everything from university to colleges. And every year we are scheduled to do between 6 and 12 more. So we'll have, with our partnership with Weston, when we're done, probably about 36 that we will have put through, and hopefully have successfully seen them pursue their dreams. And what I mean by that, too, is we know the journey of post-secondary is, I mean, my two of my oldest kids, my oldest has changed her course 3 times now.
Yeah.
She's trying to figure out...
It's discovery.
Yeah. And so
that's
we want to allow opportunity, and we understand, and we don't want to penalize them for that. The point is they're chasing their... Here's the thing. We're not so concerned about what they become. It's about what they don't become.
That's right.
Right? And that if their dream is to... It's not about art. So often we think, when we say dream big, we're talking about being doctors. We're not talking about that at all. What are you created to be? Maybe you're created to... You know, my daughter works at McDonald's, and she's loving it. They have a great system. Maybe you want to manage a fast food restaurant. Maybe you want... It's about not limiting yourself because of your circumstances. That's really what this is about.
Figuring out who you are, which sometimes takes... It took me all of my 20s.
To figure out
addiction and mental health and career. And yeah, and then I just quit my job in June, and I'm pursuing... My passion full time, and we're doing it right now.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
So the education thing is awesome, because that's really a huge expense that I think people maybe don't even consider, because they're like, I'll never be able to afford that. Even with OSEP, as you said, it's not going to be able to cover my living, or if I can't go to school locally, I won't be able to go to the school I want because... et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely.
So that's amazing. And you have the website, everybody should go to the website, citykids.ca, because there's lots of stuff to read. But why don't we quickly go through, obviously the Gift of Christmas program is the one. So I went to Toys R Us, and I bought, inspired by Rockstar Finance, Jay Money, an email that he sent. I went and spent some money, and I'm going to give some gifts to the kids here. And I also recommend everyone get a tax receipt if they can. Mm-hmm. When you give to a registered charity, the system is set up for that. You give money, the kids get what they get, and then the government gives you money.
That's
back.
Right.
It's a win-win situation for everybody. So always make sure to look into that. And Canadian Tire is helping you out by having locations. Where else can people donate?
Yes, that's all on the website.
And it's in Hamilton only?
Yes. So our Ottawa and Regina, so you mentioned earlier, Ottawa.
Yes.
We do have Ottawa and Regina branch as well,
great.
Too. And
yeah.
They do a smaller version of it, too.
Sure.
But yeah, in Hamilton, we have, best thing to do is go to the website. Now, we're in only a few weeks left here, but we do
that's
this
right.
every year.
I'll release this podcast every year.
Yeah. So we have, and going to the website, all the details are there. But yeah, the Hamilton Police Stations, they are drop-off locations. Canadian Tire has been a long-time supporter of ours, both in Hamilton and in our other cities as well, too, where we have branches. They've been tremendous supporters of City Kids.
I saw the video, I think it was from earlier this year, We Believe in City Kids.
Okay,
video.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and the chief of police,
yes,
I believe,
yeah,
is one of the people speaking. I mean, it really says a lot about the community. And I'm one of the Tiger Cats, is that right?
Yes, yeah, former Tiger Cat.
Former Tiger Cat.
Yes, yeah.
And it's just some leaders in the community who are just very inspired by City Kids. And so this is the Christmas one. I mean, everybody thinks about giving at Christmas. So we're not going to tell them not to, but we want to tell them that Christmas isn't the only time, right?
Of course, yes.
So you have, obviously you have the 2,000 kids every Saturday throughout the year. Right.
Yep, during our season. So we run similar to a school season.
Okay, yeah.
And in our summertime, we actually don't bring our kids inside. We do as you can see on the website, Summer to Remember,
you
which
have
is
camps or various camps.
Well, actually, yeah. So this is another unique approach for City Kids, and I'll just touch on it really quickly. We're almost like the Trivago of because what we've done is a while ago we said we weren't going to start a camp because there was everybody was doing camps.
There's camps everywhere, yeah.
And we thought that there was plenty of camps. So in the summertime, we focused on building our productions and then advertising so kids could get to those camps. But then we started, as we're visiting, we're hearing parents say, there's no camps for my kids, or I can't afford it, and my kids are doing nothing. And then we're hearing camps tell us that, oh, we have all these. So they basically, they pay for their week, and then they have these empty spots, just like in hotel rooms,
really?
Right?
It's yeah. all.
And so what ended up happening is we said, well, why don't we broker between?
Sure.
So rather than us running our own camp and being limited, because now we have a limited numbers and a limited what we can do at one camp, we said, look, we've been telling our kids to inspire to dream big, and we've got kids who love to, so we got kids who want to go in and learn horseback riding. So why don't we start going around all these camps and broker deals with them? And so let's go to the horseback or horse riding camp and say, you know, if you give us six spots, we'll provide transportation because that's what we do really well. We'll help cover some of the costs, but you're paying for those spots anyways because you've got the counselors, you've already bought the food, you've got the places to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Kids can't afford, our families can't, I can't even afford an $800 a week.
Is that
camp
how much
experience.
It is now?
Well, camp experiences can run for an overnight camp as low, the lowest you would find is about $350 because it's expensive to even to look after kids that long. But most are between $500 and $700 a week for camp. And so what we've done is now we've got I think we have about 30 partnerships with various overnight camps, day camps. And so we have staff that facilitate it. And we do what we do well, which is help families, because this is a lot of our families filling out these registration forms and all those. We've even went on day of and helped families pack, help kids pack. We've had to get sleeping
bags. It's
just
all overwhelming. They have a lot on their plate. If they're not working all the time, that's probably because they can't work and they're...
It's overwhelming.
They're,
so
they're
we bridge the gap there. We let the camps do what they do well. They've got the sites. We vet them well. So we do site visits. They
sure.
have to meet our standards.
Which we know are super high.
And then what's so great is that child who says, my dream is to go horseback riding. We get to say, Samantha, guess what?
Oh, man.
You're going horseback
Seriously?
Riding. Yeah, it's so amazing. So our Summer to Remember program is very popular. We have, out of our 2,000 at this point, we send 600.
Wow.
Part of that is funding. As we get more funding, part of that is it's a lot to facilitate. Getting registration forms, all the back end to do that is huge, but we continue to invest and build on. It's amazing. It's amazing when a child whose whole reality and childhood typically exists within six square blocks, when they hop on a bus and they go, I just got to tell you the story,
because
we get kids to fill out their experiences and we post them all on our wall after their camp experiences. I get emotional when I talk about this because we forget what we take for granted. You know, there's one thing where children say, what was your favorite thing about camp? One boy wrote this. He wrote, my favorite thing is I got to run through the woods because I can't do that at home. I know. But get this. We had several kids say the best thing about camp was I had a place to sleep and I had food.
Oh, no. Really?
In Canada, yes. And so, and what you realize
like
is...
consistently, maybe.
It, because a lot of our families every day, not quite sure. So our kids are growing up where they're not sure if they're going to have supper that evening. They're not. When they're at camp, it's just there. And we realize that for these kids, that was such a huge deal. They're going to be safe in the evening, and they didn't have to worry about where they're going to sleep, and that they were going to have food.
And the summertime is the time when the kids are idle. And so... it's not like they have school to go to every day. There's no structure there. And so there's much more opportunity for something to happen or the kids to go the wrong way. And so it's like a complete contrast to, you know, even at the minimum, if they're just like sitting at home all day doing nothing because they either can't afford to do it or they don't want to go outside or whatever. This is like, I don't know, it's like going to Disneyland, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah, and when part of inspiring big dreams is you got to know the world's bigger than your six square blocks, because if
that's true,
this is what happens, right? We are the sum of our environment. If we only spend time with the people that believe the things that we believe, if we only spend time in the areas, that's our worldview. Our worldview is like, this is the way the world works.
Meet different poverty people.
Poverty is my world, and the crime is what, and this is if I'm going to enter into the world, this is how I've got to be. That's what they see. But if you can take them out of that environment, and suddenly, for the first time, they say the world is so much bigger and the possibilities are so much bigger. We forget, like some of our folks, and we have new Canadian families.
Mm-hmm.
We wonder why they don't go out of their neighborhood. You know what? How frightening it is to get onto a bus and not be able to read and know where to get off?
Mm. I mean, a little bit because I went to Japan, but not here.
How vulnerable do you feel, right? Those are things yes. that we just don't think about. Most people don't think about, but for family,
we don't think about the things that we don't know, right? I mean, you know, we're both white males. We don't know a lot of what goes on in minority and female or transgender discrimination, anything. Because it doesn't happen to us, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so we just need to be a little more aware and understanding when somebody says, this is how it is. Well, maybe listen to them because you're never going to see it with your own eyes, right?
That old quote that says, until you walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, mm-hmm. you have no idea what their life is like, and it will transform you. And you're absolutely right. As we began to get to know our families and all of the complexities, the suffering, the challenges, and the beauty in all of it. Yeah, and I don't know if we were recording when we were talking about this, but I said that, a lot of people get involved in this work because we think that we have the solution, that we're going to come solve the problems of people, and you get down and you enter into these lives. And if you're willing to make yourself vulnerable and enter in, it's very quickly you realize that not only do we not have the solutions, but it's not us changing their lives. I have been made a better person because of entering into the lives of all of these wonderful people who, if I just read a paper or read the news stories or read the statistics, I would never really truly see the beauty of who these people are and how it's transformed me as well, too. And there is real suffering, there's real challenges, and I don't want our children or our families to have to experience a day more of that. But to have the arrogance sometimes that I think that we can have to say that we're going to come down and fix you, shame on us, right? They fixed us. And I think, if there's any message I would give to supporters and people who are thinking about supporting financially, don't just give a donation. Research and learn about the people because if you truly want to be transformed beyond just giving, it's going to feel great for sure. But get to know, read the stories about the families and know that the part that you're playing is investing to some beautiful stories.
And sometimes it's not just about giving money. It's about investing your time. I mean, that's what basically you've done, is invested your time, and eventually you got compensated for it, but that wasn't the goal. So I think this is a really, really good thing that we did today, talking about this. I'm really glad that I came. And if listening to Todd talk about this isn't inspiring you to give something, your time, your money, I don't know what else what else would. There's still probably another day to give for the gift of Christmas, but
we're here all year round.
Yeah, all year round. This probably won't air until for a couple of days anyway. I want to get it out before Christmas. Yeah. It's probably Christmas Eve today if you're listening to this, but only if you're listening to it on the day it's released. Otherwise, this could be many years later. So give if you can. Think about your budget, of course, first. Think about, don't give at the expense of yourself. Don't give your rent money away. I guess that would be the advice that but there's always a little bit of room. When I thought about the $100 for, even though I didn't get it from J Money because everybody else responded before me, I said, well, what's $100 to me? Is it going to really change my living situation? Am I going to go broke? Not really. But will a couple of toys make a difference to kids? Yes. So I said, I'm just going to do it myself. And I'm glad that I did, because then I looked into City Kids and then I reached out. And Todd, thank you for agreeing to be here with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.